This episode of Word Balloon is dedicated to the memory of artist Frank Frazetta. In association with iFanboy, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. John Suntress here. We're going to be talking with Jeff Parker and Gabe Hardman, the creative team behind Atlas, which re-debuts. The Agents of Atlas are coming back from Marvel Comics, and issue one of the new series starts in just a couple weeks. Since Word Balloon began 5 years ago, Jeff Parker has been a regular. This will be his sixth appearance on Word Balloon. But it's nice to have Gabe Hardman here for the first time. Gabe, in addition to being a great comic artist, has also been a great Hollywood storyboard artist. And we talk a little bit about some of the directors that Gabe has worked with. Both he, Parker, and I just can't help it, folks. We love our pop culture, so a few devolutions into Ape Talk. I hope you liked the Planet of the Apes, because it is one of the things we talk about tonight on this episode of Word Balloon. It's brought to you by the Summit City Con, coming this month, May 22nd, in Fort Wayne, Indiana. That's at the Grand Wayne Center in Fort Wayne. Our friends at Discount Comic Book Service and InStockTrades.com are putting on the con, and it's going to be a great show. Quite the guest list among them. Look at this list. We've got Andy Jewett, Art Balthazar. I'm going alphabetically here. Ben Tide is going to be there. Chris Burnham is going to be there. Dave Wachter, Hilary Barta, Gary Friedrich, the creator of Ghost Rider, Jason Howard, Jeffrey Brown, Jim Heffron, Jim Rugg, Katie Cook, Matt Kent is going to be there, Mike Norton, Mike Pampanella, Robert Atkins, Ryan Stegman, Sean Pryor, Tim Seeley, Tom Kelly, Wednesday's Heroes, Zach Krusey. It's going to be a great show, the Summit City Comic Con. And again, it's happening May 22nd. It's just $10 for attendance. May 22nd, the Grand Wayne Center in Fort Wayne, Indiana, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Don't miss it. A couple show notes before we get started. Tony Harris last week on Twitter certainly made his position known that maybe the time has come for creators to start a guild and start worrying about the future and protecting themselves, both from a health standpoint and in terms of employment, and setting some standards and hopefully getting creators to agree to such a guild. Ron Richards wrote a detailed report about it on iFanboy last Thursday. Here on Word Balloon, we're going to host a town hall meeting and let Tony and Steve Niles, who are the two guys behind the new group, the Sequential Arts and Entertainment Guild, or SAGE. SAGE will be holding a town hall meeting here on Word Balloon, and we'll be announcing a date in the days ahead. So be on the lookout for that. We will also make sure that we mention it on our future episodes of Word Balloon to promote it. But we'll set up a live forum where people will be able to call in and ask them questions, and Steve and Tony will give us their point of view and exactly what they're trying to accomplish with this new guild. And one more small personal thing. This week marks Word Balloon's 5th anniversary. It was on May 10th of 2005 that WordBalloon.com began. Couldn't have done it without you, and I want to thank everyone for listening through the years, and welcome again to our newer listeners, and I hope you have a chance to go through the archive and check out some of the great conversations we've had. This one's another one. Jeff Parker, Gabe Hardman, talking Atlas, and the Planet of the Apes, here on Word Balloon. The conversation begins with us talking about how none of us were invited to an Iron Man 2 premiere. I don't know. There's part of me that enjoyed, you know, some of the VIP stuff, but then also it's just, you see the red velvet ropes, and you're just like, fuck you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, exactly. Red velvet rope equals fuck you, as far as...
Pretty much.
Just because, I mean, I just never, ever like going to things that are... I just don't like to go to exclusive type things. I don't really like to go to Hollywood type things unless I'm absolutely positive I'm getting in and they're not going to hassle me about it.
That's why I gave you an outlet to kind of rip on that, and Atlas won.
Yeah, oh, that's absolutely true. No,
excellent.
I you know, I'm drawing the thing and totally empathizing with 3D Man for the entire thing.
Well, now explain something to me as we get started, because Jeff, I know for the longest time you when we first talk about you doing Agents of Atlas and going back to that classic What If,
yeah.
He was the one, you know, member of that 1950s Avengers team that you're like, yeah, I don't want him. And so tell us why, and then also tell us the reason why you've come around to the current 3D Man, the former triathlon.
I do this a lot with Carrie. I go, that's a horrible character. I hate that character. Then as soon as I start to write it, well, this is a very well-rounded character. What a great character this is. It's just, you know, when I looked at the original thing, It even read like Don Glute was gonna put Nomura in there, and then Roy came in the room and said, "Nah, put 3D Man. We got him in Marvel Premiere." I just can't. I'm trying to get this take off because there's a part in the story where they ask Nomura, and she finds them the robot. Which really, when you look at it, it's like, no, but here's some junk I found at the bottom of the ocean. Maybe this will help you out, Mr. Wu. We don't care that your president got kidnapped. And the whole time I just kept thinking, yeah, if you had Nomura, you'd have another girl on the team. And probably at the time, I think I was working on X-Men First Class, and I was already, the whole time I was just wishing, why didn't Stan and Jack make Angel a girl? Then you would have all these interesting dynamics, and plus Angel sounds like it should be a girl anyway. Yeah, you know, too many. It was a sausage fest around here, and I just wanted some more women in the thing. And 3D Man, he was always this very indefinable thing, and it wasn't because I had heard the American Life thing, which I had heard, but I knew about 3D Man way before then. I don't know if you ever heard this, but on This American Life, they're talking about comics characters that didn't take, and
really?
He's one of the one. Yeah, and he's one of I forgot who did the spot, but
wasn't it Scott Shaw? Wasn't he the guest?
It's not Scott Shaw. Did you ever hear it, Gabe?
I can't believe I've never heard it. I mean, I think I've like scoured through every one of those.
I know what you're talking about, though, Jeff.
I think it was on the one. I think you remember the show where the guy's going around to parties and he keeps raising the question of, would you rather be able to fly?
Oh,
or
yeah,
be invisible?
Yeah.
It's on that app. Yeah,
I think it's on that episode. And either that or in my mind, I connect it together because it's comics. One, they're talking about the Captain Marvel who used to yell split and his body all fell apart.
The 60s Captain Marvel, yeah.
Right, yeah.
So, that's very useful. And then he talks about the 3D Man, and they're in. He and I are Glass are in howling fits talking about the 3D Man and how, like, he's three times as strong, he's three times this, and everything about him is three. Like, they just to cover their bases, they keep bringing up the threes all the time.
Sure.
Because it was... I understood why. I went back and read the Marvel premieres again. And the whole concept of the fact that his brother, Chuck Chandler, was this test pilot who's kind of frozen as an image in his brother's glasses, his polio-laden brother. And that when he put on the glasses, he'd bring his brother to life, and he would pass out. And it did have this weird kind of Twilight Zone quality to it, or whatever, but I felt like it was never realized, like no one could get to the bottom of why he was a 3D man or whatever it was, other than the fact that, you know, the 3D glasses were making a comeback at the time, and
yeah.
You know, they show 3D on television, like Revenge of the Creature in 3D.
Yeah, but it's kind of like when they thought of his powers, they just got distracted by the number 3, you know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, because that doesn't have a lot to do with 3D stuff.
It doesn't have anything to do. He's no more 3D than anybody else. And but anyway, going back and looking at it, you know, I had thought later, and you'll kind of see, you'll be able to see from reading the first series of Atlas, we start making the connection in the second book, the new series, to something from the first, and you'll start to see that I did actually set myself up with something. Relating to the triangle on his chest, and you know, just in case, like I ever get to this storyline, it's like it's kind of like puzzling through. Why would there be a retcon character who didn't belong, but who felt he should have belonged to a team, and that sort of thing? And then David Gabriel, senior VP at Marvel, brought up the idea of, hey, what about the 3D Man? Because I think he thought it would be a neat twist, and I think he also likes to make me eat my words. Whenever I've gone on record several times saying I didn't want the 3D Man in there. And then Gabe and I were talking about it, and then pretty soon we had worked out a really neat way that he could be part of all this. And then I went back and read through what they had done with him in the initiative, Dan Slott and Christos Gage. And by then they were working with the second 3D Man, Delroy Garrett, who was introduced by Kurt Busiek back in the Avengers. And Dan was kind of sort of finishing the job that Kurt looked like he was starting, where he was going to turn him into the modern 3D Man, because he introduced him as Triathlon.
Right.
not a great name, and it is obviously where's Decathlon over here? What does he do? And, it always seemed like that's what he. The whole point of him coming up like that was so that he could connect to the Chandler brothers and become the new 3D man. I think
Bruce Jenner kept asking.
I haven't asked Kurt. I did ask Kurt some questions to make sure I was lining up with that, but I haven't asked him exactly. You know, why did you do it? But I'm pretty sure he was trying to make more sense out of the 3D man concept.
Okay, so we
that's my guess. That's me putting words in Busick's mouth. I don't know.
Okay, Gabe, when you started drawing Atlas, were you like, "Hey, man, where's 3D man? What the hell?"
Well, kind of, yeah. You know, I mean, I honestly am totally drawn to characters that seem really lame. You know, I mean, on the surface are totally useless, but I always feel like there's got to be something great in there, you know?
Sure.
I mean, there's got to be something that somebody hasn't exploited in any character like that. And, I mean, well, if anything, I just thought that it was kind of funny that, that Jeff was so against him. But, I was curious about it. I knew about the What If, but only from reading it in the back of the first Atlas hardback.
Okay.
I was a fan of the first Atlas miniseries just from picking it up, you know,
sure,
when it came out. I mean, anything with sort of, you know, retro characters are more so just things calling back to the past and sort of the history of, you know, the internal history of comic stuff. It always appeals to me. And, you know, so the Atlas was always kind of, you know, my thing before I had ever had anything to do with it.
Well, and I also, I think it's smart, too, to take these third-tier characters and give them a new reason for being. Because, I mean, if there is any, you know, fertile ground, I would think it's there. These ciphers that we know the face and we know the costume. But, yeah, there's never really been an attempt to really give a good backstory. And that's, I mean, Jesus, from, you know, Neil Gaiman drumming back Prez in Sandman.
Yeah.
And, you know, things like that. And, I mean, God, Brad Meltzer bringing Geo-Force and stuff. I mean, sure,
and
why
I was,
not?
I mean, I was a huge fan of Grant Morrison's Animal Man when I was younger.
Me too.
And, I mean, that was an entire book that was based. I mean, there's a lot of sort of, you know, wankery metaphysical mumbo jumbo as you go along, but
really,
but just the basic, you know, idea, even if it's sort of metatextual, of bringing back these very lame characters but kind of giving them a sort of you know, dignity or coolness or whatever, has always really appealed to me.
Definitely,
yeah, it's a problem solving thing about it.
Yeah, yeah,
and I think we solved the problem.
Very cool.
But I think we did it. You know, it's certainly building on Busick and then Slott and everybody did afterwards. But I really like the 3D man now. I really
yeah,
like.
Yeah.
Dell, as we cut, well, Jimmy immediately, because Jimmy has to hip everything up or whatever. It calls him Dell, so he isn't even called Delroy by the time he meets the agents, and it's like it just, you know, He just kind of gets in that swinging vibe right away. But I kind of use a little of my recent history and Gabe's by setting him in L.A. at the beginning of the story, and he's really down and out. He's the 50 state initiative's been shut down, so he doesn't have a job that way. During the initiative, he killed a Skrull who was sympathetic to Earth. And who everybody liked, called the Crusader. But because that was his job, and he didn't know the guy was a bad guy. He was just right at the end of the whole thing. He turns around, and his ability to see Skrulls, he shoots him. And after that, no one wants to have anything to do with Dell. And so when we meet Dell, and he's living in L.A., he's dating this redundant term, shallow actress. And he's trying to show her some stuff he likes to do, like he goes up to Griffith Park, and he wants to look out at the pretty view of L.A., which I used to like to do when I was up there. And I wasn't even thinking that it was like a whole minute away from Gabe's house. But
yeah, I just went on a location scout for that.
And then And then she just wants to hurry up and get to this party in one of the studio lots so she can go up and schmooze producers and everything. And she wants to introduce him to a producer who wants to possibly stick him in a reality show. It's just all this stuff that is not being a superhero, and that's all he cares about. And I think a lot of people are going to be able to, they're going to be able to transfer his situation over to whatever theirs is as soon as they see that.
I'm thrilled that Marvel is still behind this team. You know, Jeff, I know your affinity for the characters. Gabe, obviously, it must have only grown doing, you know, the 8-page backups and the occasional issues that you were able to do, and yeah. Also coming off of Atlas and versus, you know, Avengers and the X-Men thing, too. I'm glad the company's behind it. What's the read? I know from the podcast community, we all really love the book. But, yeah, I mean, at the conventions and stuff, have you met fans that are really into these guys?
I have. We still need sales. We're still not up there with, you know, the more established characters that everybody knows from since they were a kid. It's never a very solid ground. Our attitude is just we're going to do the best with it while we can.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm used to that because most things I like aren't in the top. Are like what something that 10% of the country ever likes. So I'm kind of used to that myself. And apparently that's the kind of stuff we create. but you know, it's when I go to the shows, and I was at Free Comic Book Day at Acme Comics in Greensboro, North Carolina this past weekend.
Lord Germain Retail Store, yes.
Yes, Lord Retail. And man, I got so many people coming up, and They're effusive, and I could see it in the way I was with certain books. I was really, like when I first met Dave Stevens and just tried to tell him how much I liked The Rocketeer. Strangely enough, at an Acme Con, it was 20 years ago. And they know they're part of a small selective audience, and they're just happy that someone made something for them. And really, I'm just making it for me. And I think Gabe's doing the same thing, but you know, some people like the same things we like, and it is kind of rewarding because you feel like, well, I may be like a indie, it's weird to say indie when you're at Marvel, but like an alt rock success or something like that.
Well, I mean, the cool thing for me about it is, it's not like, you know, it's not like it's drawing the biggest book or whatever, but it's like all the people that I meet who are into Atlas are really into it, you know?
Sure.
And, I mean, basically what Jeff's saying. But, I mean, it's just cool to be a part of something where, you know, I guess I'm just reiterating because, I mean, it's basically they're into it the way that I would be into something, you know? I mean, something that everybody else doesn't love, but I'm, you know, borderline obsessive about it, you know?
Yeah, that it's very rewarding.
Is there an editorial directive to kind of, and you know, I mean, honestly, Secret Invasion kind of made things tough to, or I guess Dark Reign, I should say, really, because it came out of Dark Reign. It did kind of make it tough to have a ton of crossovers. But then again, you guys did have the new Avengers in there right away, now that I think about it. I don't know. I mean, is there any way that, you know, Marvel is saying to tie more into the universe than has been done before? Like I said, I mean, you've had arcs like that, and again, you came off the two crossover miniseries as well.
Oh yeah, well yeah, and that's a result of Marvel saying, "Hey, can't these guys ever meet the Avengers or the X-Men?"
Okay,
like, of course they can. I have no problem with that.
Or maybe
it gives me a chance to write more things, so you know, that's fine.
Or more recognizable villains. I'm just trying to think because again, hey man, I've loved the ride. You know, Gabe, you're right. I mean, they come from a period, and it's those C-level characters that, I again, are blank slates, much like the current 3D Man, where there's a chance to really build on these guys and women. Plus, you got Gorilla Man, for Christ's sake.
Exactly.
Yeah. Absolutely.
As far as the villains, though, one of my goals is, is to kind of invert the way it is where, here's this character. When people talk about a character and he has the best villains, I generally want Atlas to be way more interesting than their villains.
Okay.
I don't want them to be the squares. You know, it's like I'd rather their villain. I think we've brought in some interesting villains. All of our villains have really been so far more sci-fi concepts than straight villains.
Mm-hmm.
That's just interesting for me. You know, I write the villains and a lot of other things, you know, and I like to use Atlas to do something different. And to me, it's just fun. You got a big, very wide variety team to just, you know, make Bob doing something weird or Venus putting a bunch of heroes in a compromising situation, that sort of thing, is just way more interesting to me. As Gabe, I think, said one night, I love watching. I can tell what page he's working on when he takes a break to tweet. And it's like, I end up drawing a lot more Marvel heroes making out.
It's true. I've been doing this for like a year, and I've drawn like, you know, six different characters making out with each other.
Well, and that was, honestly, Namora and Namor's whole relationship was hilarious and great because it put Namor in this defensive and odd role, you know, as opposed to being the arrogant asshole. All of a sudden, he's, you know, just as smitten with Namora and everything, and it was fun to see a different side of Namor.
Yeah, he gets brought across a little one note, and I've always liked that character, and I felt like it was a good place to show him. It's kind of like that thing of, well, once you're down in his house, he's actually a swell guy.
Right.
You know, like he's mad up on land.
Yeah, I think everybody likes Namor a lot, and it's just that, you know, nobody ever quite knows what to do with him and, you know, keep him that sort of one-note guy or, you know, not to upset the status quo with him or whatever. I mean, I've always liked the character, but I rarely actually liked the books that he was in.
What about their ties to S.H.I.E.L.D.? I mean, Jimmy was a former agent. Gorilla Man was a former agent and stuff. Now that we're in the heroic age, and I know Jonathan has a very massive plan going on in Secret Warriors, but is there room for Nick Fury to kind of check in on Jimmy and see what's going on? And I mean, or does, you know, it's given that Atlas is kind of this, you know, black ops independent organization.
Yeah, in fact, I meant to bring it up to him, Walt, because I was sitting next to him all weekend. You know, it does seem like he's got a lot. He's got a whole bunch of stuff set up, and I thought, I'll get around to it. It's like, we've got these stories we need to tell right now. But I do often think, it's like, well, it's only a matter of time before they bump into each other.
Okay.
Or whatever, and then he goes, Jimmy, you're still alive, or something like, you know, or something like that. Or, oh, the gorilla, I forgot about the gorilla.
And, you know, Gabe, drawing it right now, what, you know, is there something you still want to draw that hasn't come up yet and we'll be seeing in the early issues? You don't have to tell me what it is, but, like, I mean, did you have any special things that you really wanted to draw where you're like, hey, man, let's do this to Jeff?
I like to draw, you know, big, goofy pre-Marvel Age, you know, Ditko and Kirby monsters.
Ool. Let's have a scene where Ool suddenly comes up.
Yeah, Ool.
You know, I mean, I like, you know, anything that harkens back to a slightly less than popular semi-culty era. And if I can if I can get that in there anywhere without everybody telling me it's wrong, you know, then I'm fine with it.
Excellent.
I mean, I think back in the original, I guess, Atlas Volume 2, the Agents of Atlas series that I was working on before,
mm-hmm.
There was a thing where it was like, draw any character, any underwater character was in the script, and so I put Atuma in there, and I put him in the original Atuma, you know, outfit, and, you know, I sent in the roughs, and everybody was like, we'll get you some more modern Atuma reference, you know? It looks like a rabbit.
All we did was say, can you do something about that helmet?
Yeah, I know. I'm just like, what's wrong with it? I always think, what's wrong with these guys? I mean, it was like for Atlas Avengers, make Kang look cool. I'm like, what's not cool about Kang?
Absolutely.
I don't understand that.
Absolutely. Well, and also, that must have been fun to do because you had half the story happening in the Silver Age, half the story happening in the Modern Age. So
yeah.
You could go back and draw all that fun stuff.
Oh, yeah, I love drawing that stuff.
I love the Wasp's original pointy head and everything.
Yeah,
I know. It was so nice to see her in that again.
Yeah.
And alive.
It's like the weirdest outfit, but, like, it's one of those things that, you know, even treating it a little more naturalistically, it somehow still works and looks kind of mod and kind of neat.
I'm with you, man. Well, you know, and exactly, I think the three of us are, like, you know, in the Model Rocket Club when it comes to all this stuff. You know,
we are. We're totally building little train villages and stuff for O-gauge trains to ride around in.
I got a Lionel from 58. It's just beautiful.
Exactly.
The smoke still works. It comes out of the stack. It's wonderful. Jesus. And as we were getting started to record and everything, we were recreating our Twitter conversation about Escape from the Planet of the Apes and Ricardo Montalban's fine performance as Armando, the circus manager. Please join me, my friends. I have bananas for you.
In the time when a virus killed all dogs and cats.
Yes, all dogs and cats. Hence, apes turned into a slave ring.
What's the problem?
Yeah. Wait, what?
It jumps right to it. It may go A to B.
Because we have the dog and cat slave races today, it will die out and be replaced by apes.
Oh, man. Do! Go!
Actually, we just, Karina and my wife and I just did watch all the entire series because the Blu-ray set was on sale for like $40 on Amazon for a day. And so I bought it. We watched the entire thing on Blu-ray. It was great. It was awesome.
I love that Roddy McDowell documentary.
Yeah, yeah.
The making of the series is just fantastic.
And there was, I'm digressing into Planet of the Apes.
This is what we do. That's all right.
This is pretty much the way these always go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Don't worry again.
There's also little documentaries, new documentaries on each of them that are actually pretty decent, you know.
Oh, wow.
And also, but the best thing about it is Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, the sort of militant blaxploitation, you know, one where they... where they rise up and revolt.
You get Century City?
In Century City.
Right.
The Century City Mall.
When it was brand new. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That one is like an uncut version of the movie that I'd never seen before. Like in the theatrical version at the end, he gives a little sort of like, but now's not the time to kill everybody. And we have to stand down and be brothers and stuff like that. And in the uncut version, they just murder the governor guy, and he stands there and he's evil at the end of it. He basically just hops that revolutionary line that happens with everybody where you go from freedom fighter to evil guy.
Wow.
You know, and it's totally unrepentant, and it's awesome.
Roddy McDowell's a
lot
badass.
More violent than the theatrical version.
That's
anyway.
Very cool. No, I no, not at all, man. Are you kidding? No, dude, you listen. This is what we do.
No, I know.
Because honestly, no, I love that movie, and nothing got me angrier when Tim Burton was mounting the campaign and would talk about how lame the original movies were. And it's like,
fuck you.
And then as shitty as his movie was, it was like, see?
Tell
me again how shitty those movies were, pal. They were all better than yours.
Random Ape Lincoln. It's like, what?
I know.
What does this even mean?
I know a bunch of people who worked on the movie, and after it came out, I was like, what was that Abe Lincoln thing even supposed to mean? What was that? And they were like, it doesn't mean anything. No one even intended it to mean anything. It was just thrown in there to, you know, because they needed something at the end that seemed like a big twist and a shock. But
and that makes me
totally
angrier.
Cynical, you know? There wasn't an actual reason for it at all. You know, there was no motivated script reason for that.
Ridiculous.
And they passed up the only interesting thing that they could have done, which is have Wahlberg and what's her name, who's from Fight Club.
Helen Bonham Carter. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't have him go with the girl. Have him get it on with the ape.
Yeah.
Then you've got something interesting.
Yeah,
that's blasphemous, sir. I don't know if that plays in Nashville, my friend. And no offense to my Nashville listeners, but you know what I mean.
They kept talking about how he was different. No, he wasn't. All the other humans could talk, too.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It wasn't like when Heston was the only one shocking everybody.
Yeah.
And they're all screaming, shut up, you freak. You know,
yeah.
The humans are talking, yeah, they're all pretty smart.
Oh, it's amazing that you could remake a movie and fundamentally misunderstand every single thing about the story that you're telling.
Here, it's ridiculous. And, well, again, shows you how bad it was. And nothing drives me crazier, and we're going to stay on Ape Talk for a minute. Welcome to Ape Talk.
this is the way the rest of the show can go, as far as I care.
Later on, we'll be talking to J. Fred Muggs, and we'll also be doing our Lancelot Link retrospective later on. But in the meantime... No, it's been driving me crazy that there have been rumors that they would kind of pick up the Caesar story from Battle and kind of, you know, or at least even maybe in between conquest and battle, and show them rise.
Yeah, I think the idea is to retell the, basically retell conquest, you know, as a new movie. That's what I heard.
And, you know, yeah, it drives me nuts. And also, I didn't know and found this out on Twitter that, Tom Fowler was one of the artists on that great 5 years ago Planet of the Apes series that came out from, I want to say, Bang Comics or something like that.
Really? Oh, I've never heard of that.
Oh, it was great. It really
was. He did some for Dark Horse.
Oh, I didn't realize that either. Holy cow.
Yeah.
He
was getting pegged there for a bit.
The last Ape comics I knew of were from, actually, I'm not even sure if it was maybe like an earlier Malibu thing before the Ultraverse stuff, but like Roland Mann, who's an editor at Malibu back then, he had written some Planet of the Apes stuff. I mean, you know, was what it was, but I didn't know there were any since then.
Well, there you go. Well, I hope you enjoyed this version of Ape Week. Join us next week when we talk about the various...
Going back to Escape, though, I maintain, as lame a movie as it is, with watching Eric Braeden talking about the painting over and over, it does still have one of cinema's greatest openings to any film.
Yeah, it is a crazy opening.
When they all gather on the beach and the spaceship's out there, and then the astronauts get out and they take off their helmets and their apes... And the way they set up the thing so that there's half space on the side for the Planet of the Apes logo to pop up.
Yeah.
Every time I get excited when I see that, I just love it.
And, you know, and if they take off the helmets, then everybody does a take. You know, the apes do a take. The guys, the military guys do a take. And the one of the military guys is also, what's his name, from Blood Simple,
M. Emmett Walsh?
The second... okay, I think we've gone down a deep, dark well here.
Oh, man, I gotta watch that now. That's awesome.
There's a lot of incidental people in that.
Because actually, I won't even tell you the M. Emmett Walsh thing, but he was in a movie that I worked on, and I met him on set. He gives out a list of every single movie he's ever worked on, a photocopied list of every single movie he's ever worked on to everybody he meets on set.
Interesting.
So he doesn't have to explain, try to help them figure out which
basically,
one they're talking
about. Exactly. Or, you know, so that it's like, you know, because he's like this character actor that everybody's seen and everything, you know. And
here's what you know me for. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Did you bug him about Escape?
When I'm an 85-year-old, you know, character actor, that's what I'm going to do.
Did you pump him about Escape and ask a bunch of questions? Or
No. I actually didn't even really realize it then, and until later I was looking at his list, you know. And
hey, wait a minute.
I'm not going to tell you the movie that it was, though, because it was...
I think Eric Braeden, the whole reason he was hired as the captain in Titanic was because James Cameron was such a big fan of Colossus. Project.
Yeah.
I always bring up on every show.
It's honestly, I think we do. Jeff, I think you're right. Five years later, we're still talking about Colossus the Forbin Project.
I can get us to Colossus the Forbin Project 3 steps. But, I was reading something about the movie at the time, and apparently Cameron comes up to him when he sees him after the casting directors brought him in, and just starts shouting, "Never!" He's doing a line from the movie, and Eric Braeden doesn't know what the hell he's doing, and just the director shouting, you know. It's like,
well, that's not an uncommon thing for a Jim Cameron experience. So.
Exactly.
Have you worked on the Jim Cameron?
No.
No?
No.
All right.
Well, actually, you know, I started doing storyboards, and like I started in movies in '96, and so there's only been two opportunities for me to work on anything. I mean, there's Titanic, which I wasn't really enough of anybody to work on then. And then Avatar came up, and I had there were some kind of question marks around that, and I didn't sound like something I wanted to do.
Bust out the director's list of guys you've worked with, Gabe. And I know, I'll start you off with Sam Raimi, obviously. And I'm not asking for Tales Out of School, but just go ahead and give me the checklist.
Sam Raimi, and I just worked with Chris Nolan from, you know, the director of The Dark Knight.
You bet.
You know, on Inception last year.
Cool.
And Bryan Singer, and then, you know, the list deteriorates from there, you know.
Norrington.
Yeah, no, you know, I've worked with Brett Ratner.
That's usually where a list deteriorates.
Brett Ratner is a good point for that to go.
Hey, I always give him a little more credit for X3 than I think the average person does, but that's
all
right.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly. I understand.
I have I worked on X3 briefly, I mean, for like a couple of weeks up in Vancouver until something else came along. And I got a cut. You know how people send out gifts afterwards to all the department heads send them out. And I have a mug from the art department that says X-Men 3 on the front, and on the back it says, "We don't need a fucking script."
Wow, that is great.
So
outstanding.
That was the general tone of the proceedings.
I can connect Brett Ratner to Century City in one step now that I've. When I was living there, I got to tag along with a friend who Brett Ratner had he had one of the screening rooms over at Century City, it's one of these things where Hollywood people get invited to watch some movie that never actually got distributed all the time, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And this time it was Tippi Hedren he was hosting.
Wow.
And she was showing Roar, the movie her family made over 12 years, which is kind of weird because you see Melanie Griffith grow up through the movie, even though it's not supposed to be taking that long.
Interesting.
And it was actually kind of fascinating. It's not a good movie by any stretch of the imagination, but they did all of it in Africa. And you see things like at one part where Tippi Hedren's husband of the time is getting gnawed on by a lion that's playing with him. And the thing's really chewing his arm and blood's coming out. And And that guy should have got some kind of award because he's acting like he's trying to keep acting.
Right.
And really, he should just be running out of there going, "A lion is eating me right on screen." That was kind of funny. And then and then Tippi Hedren comes out and tells everybody about her big cat preserve north of town, which I assume Gabe's wife has been to.
Shambhala.
And,
yeah.
I've heard about these kind of evenings. Go ahead. You know.
Yeah, that was it. It was just neat because I get to go up and meet Tippi Hedren and go, birds, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for people who don't know and maybe don't know the name, the star of Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds.
Yeah.
And one of
Marnie.
Those, Marnie, exactly. One of the icy blondes.
And the lesser known Marnie. Yeah.
Yes. Well, and great movie, Marnie. I love that movie. Sean Connery, fantastic.
Yeah. You're from the South because only Southerners say insurance. That was some awesome reasoning in there too.
Yeah,
right in the middle of his Bond era that he did Marnie.
Yeah, that's true. You know what? I actually have to make it clear that it's not like I don't get along with Brett Ratner or whatever. I've done a bunch of commercials with him since. I've worked with him a bunch. Been to his house, you know, several times. I just,
X3.
that's exactly.
Right.
Yeah,
it's cool. Well, Inception's coming out this summer, right?
Yes. Yeah, and that's soon, I imagine. Yeah,
I was going to say, because I think I saw a poster for it when I was coming out of Kick-Ass this weekend.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it comes out in June, I think. I'm not really sure. But
very cool.
But they're a very secretive lot, you know. So
understood.
I imagine, you know, not that they're keeping the date it's coming out a secret.
No, and I remember seeing a trailer for it a couple months ago. So
Yeah.
Very cool. Oh, that's great, man.
Yeah, well, and I liked working with Nolan a lot. He's a really smart guy. I was very happy to do it. I had gotten to the point where I was very, very selective about the movies I was going to work on, and that came up, and I was like, man, I've got to work on this. I got to work with him because he's somebody out there that I really, really admire.
And you know, I want to stay on movies just for a second because I wanted to ask you both what you guys think, because we're in the midst of all the, you know, Kick-Ass and the Losers. While we're recording this, it will definitely come out after Iron Man 2 is released, but I am curious about these second and third tier comic book movies that are coming out, and I wonder if either of you guys know the expectation from the studios, because I know some of these films were greenlit because they came during the writer's strike, and they were scripts that were kind of already, you know, either locked in or, in some cases, other movies that we're seeing that have been released have been sitting on a shelf for a couple of years. And just that damage that happened during that writer's strike time, a lot of things, like I said, went into production because something had to go into the pipeline. And I'm wondering if there is a graduated expectation for some of these movies. Because I know Kick-Ass and the Losers did not have bad openings, but they didn't have stellar openings either. And I wonder if you know what the buzz is on those things.
I mean, as far as I know, nobody's going to give anything any, you know. I mean, right. No one will even remember that there was a writer's strike. I mean, I know that, like, the Wolfman was one that was a real writer's strike victim. I mean, they went into production right then. And really
had to kind of rush through it without really being ready?
Yeah. And, I mean, I was working on a movie then, too, and it was, and it was basically just the script got locked when, the week before, they started shooting because, because of it, and, nothing changed. And that movie is called Land of the Lost.
Really? Interesting.
Which I only just got around to watching not that long ago, and I really regretted watching.
I was going to say, dude, I'm sorry you lost those 2 hours. All right.
Yeah, I mean, it paid the bills and everything, but you'll notice that I'm drawing comic books for a living now.
Well, that's another thing, yeah. Now, so, I mean, honestly, Gabe, I know, again, amongst our podcast friends, we were all happy when we'd see your sections of the book, taking nothing away from the other artists that have worked on Atlas, but it's nice to see that you've got time now to, do a monthly.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a deliberate decision on my part, I mean, I've just been turning down more movie stuff, and I still do things on the side just to keep, to keep the finances going and
sure.
keep me in good standing with the union, but I just try to take things that are smaller, short-term stuff that, that's not going to really get in the way of the comics, because I basically just, started doing some comics again, and just really, really liked it. I mean, and it was really refreshing for me to, to really focus on drawing and focus on this kind of storytelling. And I just really, really like, working in comics. And, so I've just, as long as I can, I've just been putting that as the priority ahead of doing movie stuff. The other movie people think I'm crazy. But at the same time, it's, we went through, like, last year was one of the worst years. It was certainly the worst year since I've been working in movies, just for production.
Not a lot of stuff's getting greenlit.
Yeah, I mean, it's picking up
still
now.
Well, yeah, that's true, too, then, because right after the, writer's strike, not too much longer, then the economy collapses.
Yeah, exactly.
And so. I know, like, Paramount, like, cut back, like, 25% yep. of their projected releases and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Crazy.
So, I mean, so it got, this town got very bleak for the last year. So while I was still getting calls for some things that I didn't particularly want to take. I mean, I'm sure somebody's excited about the Marmaduke movie,
or that Magic 8-Ball movie.
Yeah.
But, is there really a Magic 8-Ball movie?
Yes.
Wow.
They're, I would get all cocky about, hey, look at all these comics properties, but they're also picking just board games and turning
yeah.
them into movies. So
Yahtzee, the movie.
Perspective. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. No, I mean, I got a call for the Battleship movie.
But I could see Battleship. I hate to say it. I could at least see.
Yeah, no, I mean, you can see how they could turn, take that name and turn it into a movie. But, I mean, there's a level of cynicism in this that is kind of bizarre to me.
God, Battleship sounds like something that Van Johnson made for Dory Sherry in like 1948 or something like that.
Yeah, and probably did.
Well, there was Battleground, of course, so I guess I'm not that far off.
I think Battleground's a good picture. I'm not
I love that movie.
I like Connect Four. I think that's going to make the character of Pretty Sneaky Sis.
I think Connect Four was Van Heflin, and it was a Sam Spiegel picture, though, right?
Outstanding, boys. You see? But I am glad to see that you will have time for this, because really, I think guys like you, Chris Somney, Michael Lark, I really like that kind of very classic illustrative style. Mark Schultz, Gary mm-hmm. Gianni, to go got a couple guys older and stuff. And I'm glad there's still a place for that in comics. I mean, I love a bunch of different styles and a lot of impressionistic styles. But especially for a group like Atlas, I really think there's something to be said for having a very kind of classic illustrator style.
Yeah, I think there's more of a place for it now than there was in comics, certainly, like, 15 years ago when I...
Oh, God, yeah, that was, yep. That hard period of my career called the 90s.
Yeah.
Where I had to... it's sad when I have Archie Goodwin telling me I'm too retro.
Yeah.
That was bad. And that wasn't... It was just Archie knowing what he could get approved. He wasn't...
Oh, I understand.
It didn't mean he didn't like my stuff.
Right,
he was just
right.
telling me an ugly fact. And then, of course, by the time everything swings around to a way that would have accepted me, I'm not even drawing anymore.
I know,
wah,
man.
Wah, wah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and it's, you know, I mean, this has happened to big artists like Frazetta, who were told when he came back, yeah, guess what? Comics have changed. We don't need you anymore.
Yeah.
You know,
fine. I'll just go do all these very expensive movie posters and...
and make shitloads of money.
Make tons of money, and then
it's just one of those things.
Back to the characters of Atlas, because... you just came off the great Uranium. Is it Uranium? Uranium.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the miniseries?
Yes.
Yes.
I still call him Bob. I still call him Marvel Boy. And
I wanted to call this thing just Bob.
But it was fun watching you kind of take that 50s continuity and putting it in perspective. You know, and that's the great thing about Atlas in general. It is one big, massive continuity implant. But in a very fun way, where you guys are obviously very... you got the right perspective on the old stuff. I mean, not to the point where you're not willing to change stuff, but also that you know what made it cool and are happy to represent it.
Here's the secret of doing that sort of thing. I'll just put it out there so people can use it if they want. Fan readers will tolerate you going back and putting something in that wasn't there before as long as it doesn't contradict something else they love. Like you can't go through and say, blah, blah, this thing created the Fantastic Four.
Right.
You know, and they, no, I've been buying that ever since 1964, and it did not. you know, it's like, you just don't contradict everybody else's stuff.
Sure.
You can weed out some crappy continuity that itself contradicts things, you know, but, you know, you just leave the basic timbers in place. And generally, there's room to run around and do all kinds of stuff. And for the most part, I stay away from everybody else's continuity. You know, we just... blaze our own little trail and just make the Yellow Claw way more important than he ever was and stuff like that and draw dragons and all that,
which has been fun, and I'm sure that will be readdressed soon. Is now I'm forgetting his name, but the lackey that came from the Claw's organization.
Temujin.
Thank you. See, say that again.
I'm Tenugin? Not sure exactly how to say it.
Exactly. I was going to say it. I have no idea how to say it.
Tenguin? You know.
Temujin or Temujin. It's Genghis Khan's real name.
Oh, okay. So
and that's what... And
that guy.
That character is the son of the Mandarin who fights Iron Man.
Oh, that's right. And I forgot about that. Okay. Is he still part of the team? Or is he going to be around?
He is still... As far as we have left it set up, and I haven't seen anybody else use him lately, he's still over in China kind of supervising Jade Claw and... you know, Jimmy left his old girlfriend in place.
Yes, Suwan.
Because that's the way Jimmy rolls. He just he just takes over, and he doesn't immediately fire every supervisor. He keeps them in place, and he just puts his people in there. And it's not, you know, it's not some metaphor for Disney. It's just the way Jimmy seems to approach everything.
You've been looking at all of the characters. And we've seen big moments for Namora and for Venus. And by the way, I loved, and did Paul Cornell write that letters column?
Yes.
That was very funny at the back of the second to last or last chapter. I forget which chapter it was that it was in. But that I thought was incredibly funny. Of course, I'm not talking to Paul right now, but it happened in your guys' book, so I will acknowledge it.
Why are you and Paul not talking?
It's only the time difference. I love Paul. But but also the... I was wondering, I guess Gorilla Man has yet to really get a moment, but it also seems like he is, of the group, the most, like, comfortable in his skin. And, you know, if anything, you know, being in the group seems to, you know, feed whatever was missing in his life before the group came back.
Yeah, I like the idea that he's the only one who really is in the world as it is. Everybody else has been kind of removed for a while, or is very alien to everything, mm-hmm. But Ken Hale is the touchstone to everything else. He's the one that can instantly size somebody up. He's just always got your number as soon as he sees you. And so now he gets his own miniseries, so you can get a little more of his backstory and just see him going off in solo action.
Oh, great! Who's writing that series?
I'm writing that, and Giancarlo Caracuzzo, who drew most of the Heroic Age story, Gabe was working on. Where were you? You were finishing up.
Hercules and the Atlas Avengers thing.
Okay.
Yeah, and
right.
Atlas. So yeah, Gabe was already drawing two Atlas stories at the time. And then we're, yeah, but can you somehow stay awake long enough to do this too? But you know, so my solution to that was, oh, good. Well, this will be kind of a fun little inversion. Whereas before, Gabe was the flashback guy when he first came into
right.
the book. Or whatever. Now Gabe's the modern guy, and someone else gets to be the flashback guy. And so Gabe did the bookends for the story, and that'll be out in Tales of the Heroic Age really soon, like in a couple of weeks or something.
Fantastic. I know when we were talking off the air a few days ago, I was wondering why Gorilla Man was – it looked like he was going to join the Avengers. And I'm like, oh, what the hell's going on with Gorilla Man? I'm like,
I
hope you're not losing
him. On that cover, other than someone always wants to draw him. Yeah, you know, that's probably why he's involved with that at all.
That's cool. Nothing wrong
he's
with that.
It's great to draw, though. It's my favorite character to draw, certainly.
Well, and you've got to, I mean, most people are lucky if they can just pull off a passable gorilla. But you've got him as a very specific gorilla.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, you can recognize him and you could tell him apart. And I've been tempted to just write some other gorillas in there just to see how you would handle it. Because it's like, he's got his own look. He's got, his expressions are all his own.
We are back to ape talk. This is awesome.
And,
go.
And thank you. Thank God.
Yeah, but this is legitimate ape talk.
I understand.
This is legitimate.
This is ape shop talk.
And the great thing is Gabe will pull off an understated thing or whatever, whereas I know a lot of artists who I work with, they're great artists, but they're just going to ham it up. And Gabe knows how to sell a line better than probably anybody I've worked with. And I'm trying to think of the one in specific. Oh, yeah. One of my favorite bits in the Avengers Atlas thing is when they confront the Avengers and everybody, and Jimmy says, I'm Jimmy Woo, blah, blah, and they introduce themselves. And Ken Hale doesn't give a shit and just says, I'm Stephen Fry, good to meet you. And Gabe drew him real deadpan. It was the exact way he would have said it. And I was just like, God, no one's going to appreciate this panel as much as they should have. This is awesome. And also that's when Gabe pulled off the thing of Iron Man sulking with armor on.
God,
this is the thing. This is the secret to drawing Gorilla Man for everybody out there, and no one will get it at all.
Well, the artist will.
I think of William Demarest whenever I draw Gorilla Man.
Uncle Charlie from My Three Sons.
Yeah, except that he was.
It always comes back to Uncle Charlie.
He was in exactly. He was great in several Preston Sturges movies.
Absolutely,
from the 40s. Lady Eve or, you know, a little bit in Sullivan's Travels, some other things. But it's not about the physicality. It's not about anything. I just hear William Demarest's voice in my head, and that's how I draw Gorilla Man.
Interesting.
So I think
that's funny.
That is probably the least helpful, you know, pro tip art advice ever. But
hey, everybody, getting William Demarest. Strangely enough, you know who I always put in there, because I always sit there and hope if they ever decide to make a movie of it or whatever, it's like, please get Patrick Warburton to do his voice.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting, too.
Because I think his big, bassy voice would completely match a big, lumbering gorilla or whatever. And plus, he can do a real dry take and be really funny.
Those are two opposite ends of the spectrum. I mean, William Demarest says, come on, Steve, I got to get the kids ready for school.
I mean, it's kind of deep voice sometimes.
It's not exactly that, though.
All right, fair enough.
I'm telling you, it worked. Are you drawing Gorilla Man? That's what I'm asking you.
No, exactly. Hey, man, whatever makes it come home, that works for me, man. That's cool.
Now you're making me think of what a weird situation My Three Sons was. Like, hey, here are these really here's the guy from Double Indemnity as the dad.
Yeah, you know? It's true.
I'll tell you what, baby. I gotta kill this
William
guy.
William Demarest is the whatever he is, and the uncle. They just didn't want any women in that house. Is the thing.
Yeah.
Until the end, until Beverly Garland and little Dodie show up or whatever.
Oh,
her name was.
That's true. Beverly Garland of Hotel fame. Oh, that joke doesn't work for anybody but Los Angeles.
Yeah, exactly. That's the Hollywood. Right, she does all the memorabilia shows, right? She used to in the day?
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah.
Was she like Lou Ferrigno at every comic convention, that she would be at every show? Or did she host them?
I've been to them a couple of times. They get a little depressing, though.
Understood. But, yes.
Now you have the wizard shows supplying that depressing factor.
you got to pick the shows you go to. Here's the savvy Gabe Hardman. When everybody goes to C2E2 to announce what they're working on, not Gabe. He goes down to the Anaheim show.
Judas.
I'm gonna go.
No,
why am I talking to you, Gabe? Shame on you.
I had to be here drawing this book, right?
I understand. That's
so,
all right.
But you still went to the Anaheim.
It's in your backyard. It's all right, Gabe.
They gave me a table for free, and I was like, all right, I'll go. I went until I stayed until 3 o'clock on Saturday, and then Corinne and I went to Disneyland.
Honestly, new appreciation for the Shrine Convention.
I am curious about the show because I didn't read any of the few news articles that were on the comic websites about it.
Yeah.
And obviously, I was busy running my ass around C2E2. But no, we're teasing, but let's be serious. How was the show?
It was a boulevard of broken dreams. No, I'm sorry.
All right, who were the saddest celebrities that were there?
It was a little bit, yeah. I mean, it was not a comic show by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, that's how the Wizard Chicago show was last August,
and,
too.
I mean, I think that I was just a little delusional from going to going to Emerald City, you know, and
oh yeah, that's a big letdown.
Having people, you know, lots of people come up who would, fans of Atlas, people who had read my Image book, Heathen Town.
Indeed.
You know, like, doing tons of sketches for people. And, you know, I figured, well, you know, bare minimum, you know, there's going to be some people, you know, who have some level of interest. And that just wasn't the case.
Wow. Oh, that sucks.
So, yeah.
But now,
so,
can
like,
you imagine the level of just off the screen stars who could show up at a Comic-Con that was held in L.A.
Yeah.
Just imagine.
Yeah. Sure.
The sheer wave of depression, it could create an event horizon from which no happiness could escape.
I mean, I wandered around through the autograph area was massive, and I mean, that was the main thing there. And,
sure.
You know, there were some dealers and stuff, but that was basically it. There was some, you know, there were some comics people in the back, but, you know, in an artist alley that really, you know, I mean, there were a couple of people there, but I was just walking around the autograph area. I mean, I even see, you know, like, I sort of know Vern Troyer because I worked on the Austin Powers movies with him.
Oh, that's cool.
And he, you know, and he was at a booth thing there. I couldn't even bring myself to go say hello to him because it was just so weird to, you know, to go up to those tables with the, you know, $40 Billy Dee Williams autograph or the, you know.
And you think he's probably going to feel weird, so yeah.
Yeah, creepy guys hitting on younger actresses from, you know, you know, from the Friday the 13th remake or whatever.
How you doing?
Oh, God.
That's what these things are. It's Mike TV hitting on the playmate of 86.
Yes.
You know who's such a sweetheart and is very kind every time I see her at a show that's been half memorabilia and half comics is Serena Vincent. And she was in Cabin Fever. One of Eli Roth's films.
Right.
And, I mean, I don't know her well, but I just from an acquaintance level and stuff, she is always, like, recognizes me right away and says hello.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, that's nice when a pretty girl remembers who you are. I mean, it's just shocking.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know.
How many autographs have you bought from her?
None. No, but she was, you know. But that's, no, you're right. Well, you know, and really it's more from the hangout time, like at the bar or whatever, rather than, you know, I mean, saying hi on the con floor.
Yeah, I know, I know.
But you're absolutely right. And that's, it is that kind of creepy. It's one thing if you go with that in mind. And I mean, I know people have had very good experiences. I know someone went up to Edward James Olmos at the Wizard Chicago show with the Battlestar Galactica board game. And, you know, he paid his $50 for his autograph and almost to his credit wrote this, like, paragraph on the board game of, like, the fight will never end, someday we must find Earth, so say we all, signed Admiral Adama, and then writes underneath Edward James Olmos. I mean, that's really cool. And
well, yeah, he's just a nice, good guy, you know? I mean,
absolutely.
I'm not disparaging any of the, you know,
right, you're not making
no
a blatant statement.
Disparaging the people, you know, the actors and stuff who show up for the thing. I mean, you know, it's they're just trying to get along, you know? It's just
sure,
not the place for me.
But by the same token, I hear what you're saying, and there are some really sad things when you see, like, I remember a few years ago, Margaret O'Sullivan, I forget if
yeah,
I
yeah.
At being at these things and nobody caring.
Right,
and it's like,
right. Yeah,
well,
that's
this...
more it, that you walk past and it's like, it's people who, you know, and, you know, I mean, you know, listen to the way I talk about this stuff. I know a lot of who these people are, you know, from old movies and stuff. And it just, it's depressing that you know, that people... You know, people aren't talking to them. You know, Raj from What's Happening is getting a good amount of attention, but,
yeah.
You know.
But Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. sits alone.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm with you. I understand.
But anyway,
We're just saying it's depressing.
Yeah, and it's just more, to me, it's more about
them.
The fact that it's not at all a comic show. And the fact that there's actually comics in the name of it. It seems to me that, like, calling a show a comics show, it's like some kind of weird code word cipher now for media show that may have some comics at it. You know?
Yeah, they might as well put the word kitsch in the title too.
Yeah, yeah.
They might get more people if they put kitsch in it. It's very weird, and whatever. I mean,
I really love the show promoters who don't do it
here.
keep that stuff to a minimum.
Yeah.
Don't have wrestlers and just have it be about books.
Right. Well, that's why, I mean, we went to Emerald City. I'm going, you know, we're going.
I told you Emerald City was going to be great.
Emerald City was great. You know, I love these shows where people actually, like, read the comics and are into it and are excited about it and are interested in the things I'm interested in. I mean, I'm you know, beyond those autograph shows, I'm just, as far as San Diego and those kind of, that level of show goes, I'm just not super interested in all of the kind of current media, you know, sort of promotion that those shows are about. You know, and I realize the economics of it, but just personally, I would much, much rather go to a Heroes Con or Emerald City, you know, that are pretty comics focused and just, you know, draw the people who are interested in the thing that I'm interested in.
No, I'm with you, man. And C2E2 definitely fit that description. And I'm happy that small shows. And Gabe, you were at that Windy City Con, weren't you, last year?
No, I didn't.
Or at the last minute, you couldn't make it? Okay, because
yeah.
I know, I was going to say, if you were there, I can't believe I didn't stop and say hi, given that it was such a small room.
I had talked to Chris Neesman about it, but I hadn't actually made it. I actually had talked to Chris Neesman, like, you know, a week before, you know, this C2E2 thing, and, you know, he was like, no, come on out, you could stay on the floor in our hotel room, and I was, like, this close to doing it, you know, but I realize that I might actually have to draw the comic and have it come out on time.
We understand. We totally understand. And Parker, you know, you're always welcome to the Midwest.
Well, I've been biding my time for my grand return to Chicago because I love Chicago. It's full of some of the best comic book stores.
No question.
Big reading area because you've got 6 months of winter.
Exactly.
You know, it's always a great place. And I throw off on the Wizard shows, but that was always the best Wizard show.
Right.
You're right. Up until a couple of years ago, you're absolutely right.
Because of the people, and I have high hopes for what C2E2 can become. I actually am going to be in the Midwest in another week, though. I'm going to go to the Minnesota's new Spring Con.
Very nice.
Because I totally jerked those guys around last year and told them I'd come to Fall Con, and then I remembered that I had told Mark Nathan I would go to Baltimore. I was like, oh, great. They probably already put me on a website or something. And I had to go with my hat in my hand saying, I'm sorry. I'll show up in the middle of a blizzard next time if you need me, but I already promised it. So then they said, hey, how about spring? And I went, oh, that's totally fine.
That's great.
Yeah,
no, I was bummed I missed Fall Con, too. I was at that same Baltimore show. And unfortunately, I won't be going to Spring Con this year. I'm hoping San Diego's probably next if... You know, and if not, I know I've got, at the very least, New York. And I'm really looking hard at Dragon Con, which is its own crazy kettle of fish. But I got a buddy down there who works for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution that's been begging me to come down. And
See if they keep the comics people down in the loading dock again.
That's what I hear.
That's what the That's what I would say. It's like years ago, the last time I went, like I was like walking through or heading up to my room or something, and I'd look on the other floors, and just anybody who had drawn a spot illustrations in a D&D guide was up in this beautiful, lavish room with chandeliers. And all the comics people were down in the basement where the loading dock was, where it was alternate hot and cold all the time. and doors opening and our pages blowing around. I was like, I'm sensing some kind of, it's kind of like almost we're kind of being, trying to taught a lesson here.
Weird. Well, I hope it's better.
That was back in the 90s, though.
All right.
And also, since I live on the West Coast now, it's really, I just don't go to as many of those types of shows.
Baltimore is a good show, though, right?
Great show.
Yeah. Baltimore is a great show, yes.
A lot of fun. It reminded me of WonderCon in terms of being only, you know, obviously East Coast, but in terms of mellow, but everybody's there.
It's very much like Heroes.
And, right. And that's what I hear about Heroes,
Emerald City.
And Emerald City, exactly.
Because I'm pretty much convinced that I'm not going to San Diego this year. And I'm wondering about going to Baltimore, but I don't know. I've been to San Diego for 15 years straight now, and this is like the first time I won't have gone. So it's crazy.
I've missed the last two, and now I'm feeling like I really should go, although I know I've heard of, you know, how crazy it's just been the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So I am kind of two minds, but I would like to go. It's just been a while. Just to, if anything, see a bunch of the older West Coast people that just don't travel anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
I mean it's virtually impossible to actually talk to anyone in the show. And now, so I mean, the only time you can actually see anybody is at the Hyatt at the bar afterwards.
I understand that too. That's a good
point.
I kind
of thought about just going down there and only going to the Hyatt, you know, and not actually going to the show.
You're not the first creators I've heard talking like that.
But really, it's just I don't want to like pay that much money to go to a show that I don't even have to fly to, you know? I mean, I don't even have to pay for that, and I seem to be paying a gajillion dollars just to stay there, you know?
Okay, I was going to say, you can't get you can get a pro badge and everything. You're just saying just the expense of
the show. Yeah, just the expense of the hotel.
No,
yeah.
I'm with you. Yeah.
I mean,
What else? Parker, you're always writing other things. You got the Gorilla Man thing, you got Atlas. What else? What else is in the fire? You just wrapped up Underground.
Thunderbolts.
Are you the new regular writer on Thunderbolts?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've been writing it, actually. It's thanks for paying attention, John.
I apologize.
I
thought you were holding the coat for, honestly, because I do remember you coming on. I just didn't realize
it. I was just holding it for me, really.
Okay.
In the next issue that comes out, 144, we started an entire new status quo. Kev Walker comes on as the artist, and everything just starts just going great guns.
What does a team of villains do in this new heroic age?
Whatever the hell Luke Cage tells them to do is what they do.
Okay.
Because Luke is brought in as the boss and to try to keep this thing on track. And it's just a big bunch of personalities and Juggernaut. And the only one returning from the past is Ghost.
What a great character. I've really enjoyed that character.
Yeah, everybody's really done a lot with him and really built him into something good.
Can you talk about your roster, or is it still kind of under wraps?
What's that?
Can you talk about who your new current roster is?
It's Juggernaut. It's one returning old Thunderbolt, Moonstone.
Cool.
Ghost, I mentioned. Crossbones, there's a lot of hope of redeeming him.
Interesting.
And he's the one who shot Captain America.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. And,
yeah, it's been quite the asshole in the Brubaker Captain America run. So
no, I'm
be
joking.
Fun.
I actually read Brubaker's Captain America.
I had to do that to somebody, though. And my favorite addition to the team, Man Thing.
Yay!
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
this is what's going to make it, because Man Thing is on the team.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I know everybody's like, what does Man Thing have to do with anything? And it's like, he's everything. It's really, if I could retitle the book, it would be Man Thing and His Friend.
Well, now that's really interesting because, you know, I look forward to reading it now because there's a character
that I got Man Thing on board, yes.
Well, but there now he and M11 are like, you know, great
exactly,
characters.
Exactly, the mysterious character. I love the character you cannot interpret. It's everybody else has to be so obvious all the time, but when you get one of these characters that you just don't read, you can't read, it just adds something to it, I think.
That's really cool, man. No, that's great. Always an interesting character in the right hands, but again, knowing what you've done with M11, now I'm excited. This is very cool.
Yeah, so there. And let's see, what else? Oh, yeah, and obviously, big book is Steve Lieber and I just keep stomping the floor waiting for the Underground compiled trade to come out.
Very cool, yes.
We've got some extra material in there and everything, but I don't know what happened. We didn't have it for our release party of it at Things from Another World, and so we did a bunch of sketches for people. And today I called stores, and it didn't make it out again. And now I have no idea where that book is. Is it in Canada? Is it flying around in space? I don't know what's going on.
So,
I'm really proud of Underground, and I would really like that book to hurry up and come out.
So is this the trade that we're waiting for, or is this the
yes?
Okay,
yeah, all the single issues have come out.
Okay.
Immediately, it became obvious everybody started trade waiting us right after issue one, which I take as, it's flattery and also means I don't get any money.
Yeah, forgive me, Parker. I mean, honestly, I it is an interesting concept, but I did want to wait for the trade. I am one of those.
Yeah, we knew it was going to be like that. We the only reason we didn't go straight to just doing
an OGN
a GN was because by putting the individual issues out, you could start to get some buzz about it before that came out.
Understood.
And just get people talking about it.
So what do you – Jeff, we haven't had a chance to – and Gabe, I want to know what you think too. It's still only been about a month or so since the iPad made its debut. And, the shift that we've all been waiting for is starting to happen. And how will that impact – Gabe, how will that impact Heathentown? I mean, is this an opportunity to kind of, take what you've done?
Yeah, have you licensed that, Gabe?
We haven't done it yet. I mean there's a plan to. I had held back from doing it as an iPhone comic,
Sure.
Waiting for, an iPad-like situation. Because for the phone, it was just absurd. It's a highly, sort of detailed,
yes,
swampy book. I had somebody sort of mock it up for me. It just looked like mush on my phone. So I wasn't going to do that. We haven't actually done that yet. We haven't dealt with the particulars of it yet. We're doing a second printing of it because the first one sold out.
And, great. When's that coming out?
Don't know yet.
Okay. Dude, I'm glad you said that about your art because that was my concern, not even thinking about the tablet, which we all knew was in development. But it is artists like you that I was just like, how do you look at a panel the size of a baseball card?
Yeah.
And appreciate your guys' kind of art.
I think he designed the work for the medium,
Absolutely.
And I'm not against that at all. I mean, I'm very excited about the tablet sort of revolution in comics. I mean, I think that that's, I think that that's a really positive thing. I certainly want to sort of, work on future creator-owned stuff with that in mind because it's. I think the accessibility of it is you couldn't underestimate, how important it is for, just for regular people to have access to comics, I think it's really important. So I wish that I wouldn't be sad exactly if things magically, change so that single issues came out digitally, and trades were what we collected.
I agree.
Yeah.
What about your old stuff, Jeff? Things like the Interman and things like that?
Oh, yeah, I fully plan to put Interman on it. I talked briefly to the Comixology guys, and I was just waiting for them to send me one of their contracts. I just wanted to read it. I noticed that they have their hands full working with Marvel already, so I assume that's probably... That's why it's probably taking some precedence. But there's other guys doing long boxes, doing stuff like that. A lot of people are doing it. You don't have to go with just one.
I was going to say, I hope not. And it seems like the creators that I speak to, everyone is in agreement that you absolutely don't want to go into any exclusive deal.
Yeah, I'll probably, Steve and I will probably put Underground out that way. We'll probably give the the book GN a little time or whatever with no competition before going to that.
Certainly.
I think a lot of people are worried that things are in competition, and I don't think they are.
I don't think they are either. I think it's a different audience, you know, and I think that no one's really trying to test that, you know.
No, everybody's scared, and at least Marvel's poking at it, but, you know, they're still, here's our old comics from 10 years ago. No one wants to read that.
Right.
Well, and
put Atlas out now. Put Atlas out.
Yeah.
I want Atlas out on the thing. I feel like we could find the real audience.
Yeah, absolutely.
By doing that, because a lot of the people who are going to like it, don't even know it exists.
Well, and there are pockets of what they've released that are only a couple years old, so you would think that Atlas might be something that would fall into that kind of category, and it would be a good way to have them sample, you know, your original miniseries with Len would be great.
Yeah, like Heathentown is straight horror. There's clearly a lot of people who like horror, despite what the comics publishers, IDW accepted, put out. You know,
understood.
there's a reason they make so many horror films every year.
Right, and it's about accessibility. I mean, it's about, you know, it is just a very particular group of people who, you know, and I'm certainly one of them, who go to the comic book store every week, you know, and that's not, you know, and if the only way that you can get, you know, your book out is through the direct market, that's limiting your audience so drastically that, that's very difficult. But, I mean, you know, and so having something where you can just deliver this to people instantly on something that they're comfortable with, you know, hopefully their tablet, and and hopefully they'll have access to it. It's so important.
Yeah, I want one of these people to be reading one of the pieces I keep seeing turn up in the New York Times or on NPR about a comic book, and then just do a quick search on the side. Oh, what is this comic book?
Yeah.
Oh, look, I could read it on the same thing. I was just reading the article.
Yeah, exactly. I could buy this right this second, you know? I mean, I do this with music constantly. But that's also about, you know, iTunes being like a sort of single clearing, basically, you know, there's other places to go, but a sort of single clearinghouse for stuff. I mean, I think that it would be very, very good if even though there's Comixology, there's these, you know, these various things, companies, but it would be great if there was just one store where you could buy things, you know?
Yeah.
Any content like that, much like we were just saying about music, iTunes is the best seller, but I mean, really, if you've got an article about music and you like this band, click here and you can buy X. And the same thing obviously applies, as we were saying, about horror, having it on a horror website and saying, yeah, you like horror? Well, check this out. You know, the example I always give that's a secondhand anecdote was that Tim Truman made a Western graphic novel and did this in the 90s, totally sidestepped the direct market and actually advertised for it in cowboy magazines, and Western magazines, and he did good.
Yeah,
good.
So, you know, it's weird. I wish to hell I knew what the book was, but this came secondhand from, you know, his friends who are, you know, the Mike Gold crowd, you know, Mike Gold, Mike Grell, and all the old first comic guys.
Right, right.
But they were the ones talking about Tim's project like that, and Ostrander, and then they're the ones who kind of mentioned that this was a success. So, you know.
Yeah, if you get people where they don't have to go seek out a comic, and most cities don't have a comic shop.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Much less a good one. So, you know, all three of us are lucky we live in places that do have really good comic shops.
Absolutely.
But, yeah.
But what about all these poor people in the middle of the country? It's like, you know,
fortunate.
No, you're right, though, man, and it's true. I mean, and that's why I Jeffrey Simpson, a Vancouver writer, we were talking about that, and, you know, he was really worried about the local comic stores. And, you know, I reminded him, I'm like, well, dude, I mean, I don't know. There are readers that, you know, don't have stores near them, and they're already, you know, inclined to buying stuff through Amazon and stuff. I mean, the buying habit to buy online is already there. This, as we were saying about the iPad, there's a chance to recapture people who have never stepped into a comic store and maybe haven't picked one up since they were in 7-Eleven or the local drugstore or candy store or whatever.
Yeah, I don't think any of the good stores are going away. All they have to do is then become, just like in any market, the boutique store.
Right.
True.
Like,
and
here's the place you want.
Yeah, the best ones are already that, you know?
I mean, agreed. Yes, the ones that, honestly, the ones that take chances on Heathentown, I'll say it, and Underground and Innerman and stuff like that. No, you're right. It's It's the quirky books, just like the quirky music and stuff like that, that kind of will survive in the, you know, 24-hour marketplace that's online and stuff like that. It's you really have to have, you know, the cool hip places that know the cool books that aren't getting the distribution that they should.
I mean,
that's the one thing we can do, though. We can put our books out that way. We don't have to, our creator own stuff, and we don't have to wait for someone's permission. And
right,
it's a real field leveler.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. What am I missing, boys? I see we're at an hour 20, and
talk about Planet of the Apes.
Let's go back to Ape Talk. It's time for episode 2.
That was the main thing to get accomplished here. That's out of the way.
I'm glad we went ahead and did that at the beginning. Cause,
yeah,
I think we have our title. For the episode, I think it's Ape Week with Parker and Hardman. I think that's great. So, did you guys have that in your local TV stations in Chicago? You know, afternoon when there was still an afternoon movie on regular television. You know, Ape Week was always the week I would look forward to.
Oh yeah, it's like cool. They're going to show Kong, Son of Kong, Mike Joe Young. We're gonna work through all these things.
Bela Lugosi meets the Brooklyn Gorilla.
Yeah.
Yeah, with that poor man's Martin and Lewis.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow,
oh God, those
movie.
Guys are so awful.
Yeah.
They're horrible. The Jerry Lewis guy is an Italian, and I was looking up something on them one time, and it was just different. I was fascinated with how bad it was. Didn't we do a Martin Lewis reference in something?
Yeah. In the last 10 minutes, you mean, or what?
No, I'm talking in a comic. I'm trying to think.
Oh.
Well, I will. I'll try to get one in.
Excellent.
this Ark of Atlas, just to make sure. Yeah, I remember just a few years ago watching A&E's biographies on them, and it was kind of sad how, considering as a kid, I liked Jerry Lewis so much. And then as an adult, you realize Dean's really the funny one.
Yeah, well.
And the talented one. And then when you're watching the biographies, people are lining up. They had to cut people out. There were so many people willing to say good things about Dean. And they have to keep going back to the same two people to talk about Jerry. And even they're not being very charitable.
Yeah.
Like,
he's
man.
Kind of a scary man, you know? I mean...
Yes.
Absolutely.
I mean, that the King of Comedy thing is kind of how I think about it, you know?
Levy wrote that amazing biography on Jerry Lewis called King of Comedy as well.
Oh,
I know
really?
You're talking about the Scorsese movie,
yeah,
but it is creepy. It is very creepy, and
does
fascinating guy.
Why he ended up doing the muscular dystrophy telethons?
No, I know that I know the two of them did it before Jerry continued to do it.
You, what I read or whatever. Now, quick, get Lieber in on this because he always remembers it too. But there was, as someone was talking about the fact, this woman essentially guilted him into starting to do those things, saying, your whole act is making fun of special needs kids.
Wow.
And it's like,
wow.
Oh, my God, it is. And I never even thought about it. And then after that, every time I'd start to watch a Martin Lewis movie, I'd be like, holy shit, it really is.
A little bit.
Like, you know, and so that's someone kind of guilted him, unless it's made up. But I think it had footnotes and everything, which makes it real. That's how someone roped him into starting to do the MD telethons originally, which then became such a big thing.
Wow. Well, again, say what you will, the guy has raised hundreds of millions, if not billions.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, I think your actions have to weigh more than your intentions.
Right. Well, you know, and there's some, you know, people that have done great things that are still screwed up people. Don't get me wrong. So.
Oh yeah.
And still, I've read The Total Filmmaker. It's a very interesting book, and his films are, on two levels, interesting to watch. I mean, and there are some that still are gut level funny. And also ones that are just creepy and strange, like hardly working, and
until we see The Clown Who Cried, we can't really judge.
You
took away my Clown Who Cried reference now.
I can sense what he's going to say, and I just rush in.
Come on, man! It's the greatest story about a movie that we will never see, and who knows if we will ever see.
We will see it. I know we'll
in our lifetime.
I
hope so.
Me going centuries. We're going to see this movie one day.
I hope so. Did you ever read that Spy magazine?
Yes.
You know, and honestly, one of the great things was to be able to talk to Drew Friedman, who drew the caricatures that they did in the right. in the article. I love that guy. I absolutely love. I've loved that guy for decades, and I'm so
Friedman
happy.
Friedman is the meanest fucker on the planet.
Oh, absolutely.
No one can even hang with when he did that whole.
The Mayberry one or the Fred Mertz one?
When he did the Nat King Cole skull with the hair on it, the one that got all of those advertisers to pull out of whatever the record thing was, it's at the record club or whatever that was.
Columbia
that
record.
Do you know the cartoon I'm talking about?
I do.
Yeah. It's Natalie Cole is holding. She's got the earphones on, and she's going. Pot it down, Pop. You're stepping on the line. And he's over there in his tux. He's just a skull. It's like, I mean, it really made the point about as well as you could make anything. And so people were just livid over it. It just made such a big stink.
That's outstanding. I had forgotten about that one because I'm thinking
it was hilarious.
I love the Fred Mertz as a pimp.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, the poor African-American guy trying to get gas in Mayberry.
From Raw, right?
Right, where apparently Art Spiegelman is like, hey, can you pull it back a little bit? Harvey Kurtzman was like, yeah, I think you went a little too far.
Well, I think he did that when he was a student of Harvey's at SCA.
Exactly, oh, really? that's what he told me.
It's very shaky compared to all his other stuff. It's very early.
Oh, yeah.
But it's hilarious.
It is. It's fantastic. Now,
when you see Gomer over there getting on the phone, and then it cuts to Andy. Oh, what?
Oh, man. Well, you know, I'm hoping to have Drew back in the months ahead because I know he's got a new book. And anytime he has a new book, I'm always like, oh, come on. Let's tell stories.
Yeah. Tell him, even though we know he'd hate our stuff, we love his.
That's cool. Well, I did pass along an email. It's not a fellow creator, but Ron Richards says hello. You know that.
Oh, good.
So, yes. And
I like Ron, too.
You know, honestly, I really do wish at times that we all did, like, live in the same town. And I guess through the internet we can do this, and maybe I can finally figure out Skype. But it really would be fun to have, like, Friedman on with a bunch of us, like, ridiculous pop culture people, and just
so we
like,
can just ask him pointless question after pointless question.
Well, we could do what we've just been doing for the last 90 minutes, and that's having fun, you know, from Armando the Circus Manager.
I wanted to get his what's his last book, the Jewish Comedians book?
Yeah, old Jewish comedian, or more old Jewish comedians. The sequel.
Yeah.
Well, that's why it's like, you know, and it's these faces that we're talking about earlier, Gabe. That like Herbie Fay. You know, Drew Friedman does an entire portrait of Mousie Gardner and Herbie Fay. And nobody knows who these people are, but then you see the picture, it's like, oh, that guy.
Right.
From a million sitcoms and movies.
Our correspondent is, we don't have Joe Franklin, but we do essentially work a cipher of Art Bell into Agents of Atlas quite a bit.
Outstanding.
Because it goes with the world.
Now I want to
get Joe Franklin in.
I want to get Joe Franklin in there. And not there's some guy who's a some guy on a message board who goes by Joe Franklin who hates my art. And I'm just picturing him as, you know, New York broadcasting legend Joe Franklin, you know, just railing against my stuff.
I recall telling Eddie Cantor how much I hate your stuff.
Paint. Bill Cosby always used to come on the show. It ain't paint.
I used to watch that WOR show. That used to make it to my college town. All right, we are here now with a wonderful star. You know him, you love him. Nick Apolloforte. Who? What?
Apolloforte.
Guy from Broadway, Danny Rose.
Right.
Jesus. Anyway. All right, boys.
I like that Cosby would go on and do his show even after he was big.
Joe, I will always do your show. He was like that, though. Irv Kupsinen would always have Cosby on, or Eddie Schwartz. Anytime, you know, I think Cosby was just like that in terms of, like, remembering guys. Gents, are we good? Is there anything else that we need?
I think we've ostracized about all of our audience we possibly could.
You don't understand. 5 years into the show, and you still don't get it. Not at all.
No, I don't get it.
No, you know, honestly, Parker was one of my first guests. 5 years ago, literally to the month. So
wow, it's been that long.
It's been 5 years. I've reached my fifth anniversary this month. So yes,
and, I think I've actually been listening almost that long because I know I started listening on I was working on Spider-Man, on that last Spider-Man, and it wasn't quite that long because maybe it was like beginning of 2006.
Okay.
Well, or late 2005, I guess.
Very cool.
But, yeah.
No, man, I, you know.
Oh, get Chaykin back on. He's always good for stories.
Oh, yeah. Hey, pal.
He can do them all day. And that's the other thing. I forgot, Gabe. I promised you we would go up to Chaykin's so you could check out his art collection sometime. So.
Yeah, that would be great. I'm such a nerdy fan of Chaykin these days. I reread all the American Flag stuff recently,
yep.
And you know, just such great energetic stuff. Love that.
Absolutely, man. No, he was one of those independent voices that it was like, wow, I've never, you know, I mean, and he was around in the 70s and I was aware of him, but you're right. Flag was just such an exciting, you know, like, wow, you can even go that far in comics. Cool. And then Black Kiss. Holy shit.
Oh yeah. No, absolutely.
Holy shit. No, he's
a hardback copy of that just came out today. Like, I just saw it at the comic book store, but, unfortunately, I've been doing these sketches every day, like a warm-up sketch every day, and then I'll put it on for sale online, and every single one of them has sold except for the American Flag one that I did.
Oh,
I don't know why the
did you draw the cat in there?
It, man. No, I didn't draw the cat in there.
That's why.
Yeah.
I haven't mentioned Comic Tort. I you know, had Somni on from C2E2 really kind of talk about the origin and stuff. But
yeah,
Gabe,
Comic Tort is great.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, I don't have anything to do with it. I'm.
Oh, you don't contribute?
No, nobody asked me.
It seems like he would, but really he doesn't have time.
But no, no one has asked me. You know?
I think you could just jump in, and certainly you're, you know, I think you'd fit right in with the boys that are there.
Yeah,
my God,
they're all doing great work. I'm not a joiner, you know.
They're doing fine.
I want to see a Gabe Hardman GI robot and some of the other characters that they've done.
You know, maybe I'll draw it on my own.
Wow. Well, no, and I understand if you don't have time, because I mean, essentially, I'm guessing that is their warm ups or whatever.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I actually hadn't. Yeah, I mean, I hadn't been doing the doing that sort of thing just because I always felt like, well, I'm here drawing. Surely I should just be drawing what I'm getting paid for, you know?
Understood.
And that I would just be wasting time if I did it. But then, like, a couple weeks ago, I did a warm-up sketch, and I was like, hey, I'm actually, like, doing better after I did that warm-up sketch. So it turns out there's a reason behind doing that. And so
you never stop drawing long enough to not be warmed up, though, is the thing.
Yeah, well, there is that.
Fair enough.
But anyway, I've been doing a lot of them, and I just put them on Twitter every day, and, you know. Yeah,
you know,
it's just for fun.
Well, I'm one of those guys that are entertained by him. So again, I'm glad to see that there's more time for you to do comics, and we will be enjoying your work in Atlas. And Parker, you continue to write, a good quarter of the Marvel Universe. You, Fred Van Lente, Bendis, and then Brubaker with a couple in Fraction and Jason Aaron, I think.
Yeah,
pretty much. So
keeps it nice and personable.
Keep it up. No, that's great. And seriously, guys, thanks a lot, as always.
Oh, thank you, John.
You know it. I enjoy reading and looking at the art, and I'm always happy to talk. And you're good Twitter friends as well. So.
Thank you for having us on.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Jeff Parker and Gabe Hardman talking about Atlas number 1, which is coming out in just a couple weeks from Marvel Comics. Be on the lookout for Parker's Gorilla Man miniseries coming up later on in the year from Marvel. And later this summer, it's Inception, the new Christopher Nolan movie, with contributing storyboard art by Gabe Hardman. Coming in the weeks ahead, again, we will have the Sage Town Hall meeting with Tony Harris and Steve Niles and you. So looking forward to your contributions. Be on the lookout for that date. Once it is firmed up, it'll be at our website, wordballoon.com, and also promoted right here on this here podcast. Today brought to you by the Summit City Comic Con, again happening at the Grand Wayne Center. We're less than 2 weeks away from it. It'll be happening on May 22nd from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., just $10 to get in. Come see a lot of your favorite creators all in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and a great show that is sponsored by InStockTrades.com and DiscountComicBookService.com. Word Balloon will be there. I might be moderating a panel or two, and also be hanging out and doing some interviews on the spot, as I always do. And hope to see you there. Make sure you stop by and say hello. That is the Summit City Comic Con happening May 22nd, the Grand Wayne Center in Fort Wayne, Indiana. In fact, I can even promise you Word Balloon magazines will be there for you, all free, if you just come up and say hello to me. So make sure you check it out. 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., May 22nd, in Fort Wayne, Indiana at the Grand Wayne Center. That'll do it for this episode of Word Balloon. Thanks for listening. John Suntress reminding you, look for us at wordballoon.com. You can find our archive of 5 years strong of interviews going back to 2005. A lot of your favorite guests are there waiting for you. Make sure you subscribe to our iTunes feed as well. If you'd like to leave us a review or rating there, we certainly would appreciate it. Questions or comments about the show, you can follow me on Twitter, John Word Balloon, or Facebook me under my name, John Suntress, or you can come to the Word Balloon message board at wordballoon.com or shoot me an email, john@wordballoon.com. Until next time, thanks for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, 5th anniversary, copyright 2010.